Welcome to the jungle, a tremendous Monday morning to you. What's going on? Hope you had a great weekend. Another wild, wild NFL weekend, and we are all over it. Nice to have you here. Live in the Quicken Loans studios, I am Jim Rome. Quicken Loans, apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. Let's get at this thing. September 24th. Man, I can't believe how fast this year is going. Already into the third week of the NFL season and blowing right through it. If you know what you want to talk about, just know this. I've got an interview coming up next segment, and then we are open for a little while. Hit us up right now, 1-800-636-8686, 1-800-636-8686. That telephone is toll-free. You can also hit me up on Twitter at Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at HaveATake.com. In terms of the interviews, coming up next segment, Ross Tucker, former NFLer. He's got his own podcast. He's got a great beat on the NFL. We'll get his thoughts on what happened over the weekend. Dial now. Get yourself in. Tiger Woods finally gets his win. You know, I've got thoughts on that, which I'll get to later on. I had a big weekend myself. Went out to the LA Coliseum, did a hit on the NFL on CBS, had a blast with that. I want to recap that and talk about the so-called battle for LA. And we'll talk college football. Lots to get there as well. All right, starting with the NFL. Now, you knew it was going to be a weird week. A really weird week in the NFL when the Cleveland Browns started things off with a win on Thursday night. Now, you snap that streak, and you do it the way they did it, with a rookie leading a comeback win, and you know things are getting weird. Weird is good, but when you see how they did it, you knew things would be really weird, and they were, starting with Tennessee over Jacksonville, 9-6. Now, that's not the weirdest thing ever, not when you consider that the Titans did beat the Jags twice last season. But you know Jacksonville wanted to change that and still was not able to do so. The last thing that I expected was to see Jacksonville come out as flat as they did yesterday after hammering the Patriots last weekend. Then again, after last night, we now know that a win over the Patriots is not worth nearly as much as it used to be because the Pats themselves sure as hell aren't what they used to be. And how about the Bears? The Chicago Bears in first in the NFC North and being a legitimate force through 3 weeks. Now, that's weird. Really weird. The Dolphins being 3-0 and holding a two-game lead in the AFC is even more bizarre, especially when you consider that they lost their best offensive weapon, Jarvis Landry, and Ndamukong Suh in the offseason. So Trevor Price and I do this on RPO, where I ask the question, fake or real? Fake or real? The Dolphins, 3-0. Are they fake or real? We'll get to that a little bit later on. But if they are what their record says they are, then they are undefeated. One of the only two teams in the AFC that are unbeaten. At least we can count on this. At least we can count on the Dallas Cowboys struggling. At least we can count on the Raiders choking away another second-half lead. And by the way, that's three times now in a row they've done that. 3 weeks in a row, the Raiders have blown a second-half lead. Isn't that why you bring John Gruden in? Isn't that why you pay John Gruden $10 million a year for 10 years? Not $10 million for 10 years, $10 million a year for 10 years. Don't you pay that guy to make sure that sort of thing does not happen, as opposed to it happening every single week? And as crazy as the Titans, the Bears, the Dolphins are, they are still nothing compared to the Buffalo Bills. The Buffalo freaking Bills. 17-point dogs on the road. Starting a rookie QB without any offensive line in front of him and really no weapons around him to speak of, and they're going up against one of the best defenses in the NFL. Never mind winning. You just hope to hell your franchise quarterback does not leave that building in a body bag. You do that and it's a good day. But come on, nobody in or outside of Buffalo actually expected the Bills to win that game. And not only did they win that game, they curb-stomped the Vikes, who obviously were sleeping on them, looking beyond them, did not respect them. And they smashed just about every single Survivor League in the process. Taking the Vikings yesterday in your Survivor League was like ripping candy from a baby, except that baby just broke your face. It'd be like you reaching into the stroller, just trying to take candy from that baby, and that baby clocking you. I mean, are you kidding me about the Bills? 17-point dogs on the road. and they still get it done. And not only got it done, but how they got it done. And they did it with Josh Allen. And the Bills, afterwards, were reportedly talking junk, shouting, "You like that?
You like that?
You like that?
You like that?"
The Bills, of all teams, walking off the field screaming, "You like that?
You like
that?
You like that?"
I know Kirk Cousins did not like that. I know Mike Zimmer did not like that. Because if Zimmer held himself to the same standard as he did the kicker that he broke off last week, Zim would be looking for a new gig right about now. But even the Bills pulling off the biggest Vegas upset in more than two decades is not as shocking as what I saw last night in Detroit. Lions 26, Patriots 10. It shouts, "That was not super." Let me repeat that. Matt Patricia and the Detroit Lions 26. Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and the Patriots 10. I've got one question. What the hell is with the Patriots? They just lost to a team that got booed out of its own stadium less than 2 weeks ago. And they didn't lose. They got hammered, manhandled, ragdolled, dominated, just like they were last week against Jacksonville. Right now, the Pats' only win this season is over winless Houston. How bad was it? They started the game with three straight three and outs for the first time since 2000. Maybe longer, because the NFL Network's data only goes back to 2000. So let me ask you once again, how bad was that? How bad was it? The Patriots just lost back-to-back games by double digits for the first time since 2002. There are teens getting driver's licenses who've never seen the Patriots lose back-to-back games by double digits until last night. And no, that was not about the Pats being distracted by the reports of the Gronk to Detroit, a trade that nearly happened in the offseason. That was not that. No, what that was one team beating up another team. And this time, it was the Patriots eating punches. The Lions. The Detroit Lions had three drives of nine plays or more. The same Detroit Lions who were being booed in an embarrassing loss to the Jets and came into last night 0-2. And then last night they did whatever the hell they wanted to the Patriots, whenever they wanted to. I always like to quote my guy, Pat Tillman, in matters such as these. As Pat liked to say, in a matter such as that was, quote, a nice, swift ass-kicking.
Nice, swift ass-kicking.
The late Pat Tillman. I mean, I never thought that Matt Patricia, for instance, was an actual rocket scientist. That is, until I saw the Pats' defense without him. Because Detroit, a team that came into the game ranked 30th in the league in running the ball, ran it right down New England's throat. And just as troubling for the Pats was that when they tried to run the ball themselves, they couldn't. Again, not exactly super. And when they try to pass, they couldn't do that either. Albie, dude, don't make that face at me. Just play it again.
It's going to be super.
See, Alvin, it's fine. You should have seen the look that guy just gave me. Alvin, if you're watching on CBS Sports Network, Alvin just looked at me like this. Gave me that kind of sideways Alvin face. Super!
Look, it's going to be super.
It's going to be super. Tom Brady was not the GOAT, nor was he super. Brady, 14 for 26, 133 yards, and a TD. That's the GOAT. The Gronk, 4 receptions, 51 yards. Better than he was against Jacksonville, but not by much. Their offense is not exactly firing on all cylinders right now. In fact, it's pretty non-existent. You've got a Hall of Fame quarterback, Hall of Fame tight end, and somehow they still have a brutal offense. Now, don't get it twisted. This is not about Brady being old. It's about the talent not being around him on offense. And what talent they do have is not doing anything at all. And sure, Julian Edelman's going to help. He'll help, but it's not going to fix everything. We'll see how much it helps. It'll help. It'll help when he comes off suspension. I would imagine Josh Gordon will help when he's available. Gordon can stretch the field. He can loosen up coverage on Gronk. Maybe get the Pats offense back on track. But unless Gordon can also put a hand in the dirt and rush the passer, that is not going to solve all their problems. At least, though, you can count on Bill Belichick being especially mellow afterwards especially when he was asked about that 12-man on the field penalty.
What happened on the 12-man on the field in the second quarter? How did that happen?
It was a mistake. Do you think it was planned?
Fire. It was a mistake. Do you think it was planned? Hey, Hood, if it had been planned, it would have been your only plan that did work last night. It was a mistake. Do you think it was planned?
Do you think it was planned?
It's good stuff, Hood. If it was the plan, it was the only plan that worked. Hey, listen. Chouts, I understand that people have rushed to throw dirt on the Patriots dynasty in the past. And everybody who's done that has been burned, and they've been wrong every single time. I'm not doing that just yet. I'm not here to do that. Even with the Pats at 1-2, already in the hole in the AFC East, it's not time to panic. But you can see that that time is not that far off. You can see that time coming. And believe this, I know exactly where my shovel is, because I've never been so convinced or so close to saying that there is going to be a Patriots funeral right around the corner. I've already got their plot picked out. I mean, better safe than sorry, right? And right now, they look sorry. Sorry as hell. Not a good thing right now. So, they're 1-2. Good news is, they're only looking up at Miami. Are you sold on the Dolphins yet? Bills Mafia, how you living? What an amazing deal. 17-point dogs on the road with Josh Allen. And look what they did. Raiders, 0-3. Raider fan, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that your season's already over at 0-3. In fact, yes, I will. Your season is already over at 0-3. The stats bear that out. If you start 0-3, you don't make the postseason. We know this. But especially when you can't hold a lead. I want to talk more about the roughing the passer penalty. The rule. Clay Matthews gets burned again. Every single week, he makes a less, I don't know, flagrant, violent, offensive, whatever you want to call it, blatant. And he gets called every single week. Hey, Rome, I am not panicking. This is an email. I am not panicking. I am not panicking. I am not panicking. I do not care if Patriots fans woke up this morning and realized going into week four that the Cleveland Browns have a better record than the New England Patriots. The first 4 weeks of Patriots seasons are always extended preseason. The only stupid part about being 1-2 and looking at playing a 3-0 Dolphins team next week is that we have to listen to the rest of the league pile on like always, thinking that the Patriots dynasty is done. Just do me a favor and talk Tiger all day long so we do not have to listen to fans of loser franchises talking about how the Patriots are done. Matt in Poland Springs. And then he's got a bunch of unwars. Isn't that funny? He did exactly what I said they would do. And that is pretty much what Patriot fan always says. We always start like this. It never matters. We don't care about September. It's an extended preseason. We'll be fine. And the truth is, generally, they are fine. Generally, Patriot fan is right. Except I think it's different this time. I do. All right, short timeout. When we come back, Ross Tucker joins us. Don't go anywhere. You know, there's something to be said for being the best. You know, when you've outrun, outpaced, outsmarted the competition, elite athletes know that you cannot be the best until you have beaten the best. If you want to compete at the highest level, you need to be strong and you need to stay strong. Like Castrol Edge, it is the strongest full synthetic motor oil, engineered with fluid titanium technology to reduce power robbing friction and to maximize engine performance. For instance, did you know that friction can rob 10% of performance from your engine? Imagine, as an example, being lined up across from somebody who is at 100% when you're at, what, 90? Advantage that guy. Castrol Edge is strong under pressure. It reduces friction so your engine can perform at its highest level. It's not only strong, it is 3 times stronger than the leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown, and that's according to the Kurt Orban test. Kurt Orban. That is the strength your engine needs to perform at its highest level and keep you living on the edge. Castrol Edge. Stronger under pressure, Castrol Edge.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Honestly, another wild, wild weekend in the NFL. Amazing weekend. joining us right now. It's a great guy to break it all down. Former NFL player. He spent 7 years in the NFL as a player. He is an NFL analyst. He is a host of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, and you can follow him on Twitter at Ross Tucker NFL. Ross, great to have you back. How are you?
Jim, fantastic. Always good to talk with you, man. Yesterday was crazy.
Crazy. It's awesome. We love team content. So, Ross, let me ask you this. If the Jets smashed the Lions in week one, and then the Lions manhandled the Patriots last night, what does that say about the Patriots?
You can't do the transitive property. I know what you're getting at, and I know you know that in the NFL, because it just doesn't work that way. It tells you that week one, the Jets had the Lions number, and they were still figuring some things out. And really, I thought last night, you don't often say this, Jim, I thought Matt Patricia outcoached Bill Belichick. You know, on the one hand, he knew that Gronk was pretty much all Brady had offensively. So he doubled the crap out of Gronk, and the other guys weren't able to win. And then on offense, Patricia knew that the Lions, it's been well documented, they can never run the ball, right? They hadn't had a 100-yard rusher since Reggie Bush like 5 years ago or something. But they do have some pretty good receivers in Marvin Jones and Kenny Galladay. So Patricia knew, Jim, that Belichick would be in a two-deep safety look to not get beat over the top. And he said, you know what? Let's just keep running it then. It's a favorable look. We should be able to run. I got some belief in my O-line. We'll run it, and we'll play keep away from Brady. So they just took what the Patriots gave them. They pounded it and ground on the ground. Stafford did just enough. Brady was barely ever even on the field, and it was domination. It's not often one of Belichick's proteges is able to outthink him, but he did, in part because the Patriots are a little outmanned right now until Edelman comes back.
Spoken like the Ivy Leaguer that you are, Ross. All right, so in terms of that, are they a little bit outmanned until Edelman comes back? I mean, for instance, people have shoveled dirt on the dynasty in New England multiple times over the years, but exactly where are they right now as a team? I mean, are you confident that Belichick is going to make this work at some point, or are the Patriots actually in trouble?
I'll believe that they're not in the AFC Championship game when I see it. I mean, they've been in the, what is it, 7 or 8 straight years they've been in it. Once they get Edelman back, I don't even know if they'll get anything out of Josh Gordon, Jim, but once they get Edelman back, they always seemingly have slow Septembers. You know, if you're going to beat the Patriots, you want to play them in September. The Dolphins actually have a golden opportunity next Sunday because it's the last game without Edelman, and if they could somehow win in Foxborough, which I doubt they'll do, but you never know, they would be up 3 games on the Patriots and actually have a legit chance, especially the way the Dolphins are playing. But ultimately, I still expect them to win the division. If you look at the AFC, you know, if there were some really good teams in the AFC, you could say, well, maybe the Patriots won't get a 1 or a 2 seed. But I still think if you look at the different divisions, they'll still get a 1 or a 2 seed, which means they'll still be in the AFC Championship game, and we'll see what happens then.
Ross Tucker joining us once again. Right, Ross, as somebody who played in the NFL and has covered the NFL, exactly how do you explain the Buffalo Bills as 17-point dogs going into Minnesota and doing to the Vikings what they did to the Vikings?
I explain it by saying that's what makes the NFL awesome. You know, it's really different, I feel like, Jim, than the other pro sports where you play every night or every other night. I don't ever remember, maybe with rare exception, going into an NFL game and thinking we were going to lose. Like, you know, you have a plan all week. I mean, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You look at the opponent's tendencies. You see matchups that you like, things that you think you can exploit, and you feel good going into the game. And because of that, that's why the transitive property doesn't work. Certain matchups are just better. Sometimes, some weeks, you just have a better plan than they do. And you know what? They got a pretty darn good quarterback in Josh Allen. I mean, I thought that LeSean McCoy was the only good player the Bills had on offense, period. Yet Allen comes out, and he's crazy athletic for 6'6", 240. I mean, I don't know how long he's going to last trying to jump over 6'5 linebackers and dive for touchdowns from 5 yards out, but it's going to be really entertaining to watch in the meantime. And I think that they just got up on the Vikings. Their defense played very well. You know, in fact, their defense has played well since halftime of the Chargers game when Sean McDermott said, forget this, I'm taking over the defensive play calling. I know Leslie Frazier's my guy, but sorry, Leslie, I need to take the sticks. You know, I'm calling the plays now. And their defense has been much better ever since he did that.
Ross Tucker, my guest. Ross, you know the clones. I'm going to have to ask you to stop talking about the transitive property, man. It's going right over their heads. You know the clones can't handle that. You know it, but it's a great point. Ross Tucker joining us. All right, you mentioned Josh Allen, and you wonder. I mean, this guy, he is so athletic for a guy his size, but you wonder how he can keep playing like that and last. Of course, that brings me to Jimmy Garoppolo, who looks like he tore his ACL yesterday. Ross, if he's done for the season, and it looks like he probably is, how bad is that for the 49ers rebuilding project and for Garoppolo's future?
Well, it's awful. I mean, for Garoppolo's future, think about how happy he is he's not playing this year on the franchise tag. You know, when he got traded from New England to San Francisco last year, it was the last year of his contract. So if he hadn't played, think about this, Jim. If he hadn't played so well those last six games, he doesn't get that mega contract extension from the Niners. They probably take a little bit more of a wait and see approach if they went like 3-3, and he's playing under the franchise tag in which he plays, I don't know, okay for 2.5 games and then tears his ACL. Instead, he got like $70 million guaranteed. So that was life-changing for his career, at least financially. As for the Niners, Jim, they're done. I mean, they got C.J. Beathard. They're done. And by the way, this is why they have all these rules protecting the quarterbacks in the first place. Nothing can be done about Garoppolo tearing his knee as he tries to scramble in a non-contact before he got blasted, by the way. But the owners know that last year, nobody wanted to watch a Packers game after Aaron Rodgers got hurt because Brett Hundley was terrible. And now the 49ers have 13 more games and nobody wants to watch them. Like, they have some primetime games. Nobody's tuning in for that. Watch, wait till you see what the stands are like for the home games the rest of the year for Niners home games. It's about business, Jim. I know you respect that. The NFL owners realize that they're going to get a lot of telephone calls. People are going to be up in arms. They don't like the new wait on the quarterback rule. But if the owners can find a way, any small way, to make quarterbacks a little bit healthier or to minimize the risk that those guys get hurt for the year, like what happened with Rodgers last year or Garoppolo yesterday, they're going to do it because there's nothing worse for business than backup quarterback.
And Ross Tucker joining us. It is such a key point. It's such an interesting argument, Ross, because you're right. I mean, I don't dispute anything that you just said. There aren't enough star quarterbacks to go around, and you can't afford to have them go down like that. But at the same time, if you are a defensive player, if you're Clay Matthews, and if you get flagged for the hit that he had this past weekend, exactly what are you supposed to do as a defensive player? What could he have done differently in that situation?
Well, I think in my mind, Jim, they should probably only call it when it's more egregious than that. In other words, they've made their point, right? Like, they don't want you putting your weight on the quarterback. So guys are already trying not to do what they used to. I mean, they used to just, they called it splashing.
Right.
Remember when Siragusa splashed Rich Gannon
sure.
in the AFC playoffs and Gannon's shoulder popped out? You know, they used to do that. Now they're saying, look, we don't want you to put your weight on it. Even Barr put a little extra something on Rodgers when he crunched him last year. I think if it's a normal tackle, you let it go. If it's clear the guy's trying to put all his weight on the guy, then you need to call it. I don't think they should call what Clay did. That said, these guys are really good at finding a way to not get fined. I mean, I didn't think guys would be able to adjust their target angle that quickly on hits to the head or neck of defenseless wide receivers over the middle. You hardly ever even see that anymore. They've done such a better job with that. So they'll figure out a way, Jim. I mean, J.J. Watt had 3 sacks yesterday. He didn't get called for one. So somehow, some way, guys are going to have to adjust the way they attack the quarterback and more lasso them down than, you know, hit them as hard as they can up high. It's tough. It's not fair for the defensive players, but this is a league that I've never seen them make a decision that was not in the best interest of the business. I've never seen them once. And they don't care if people call and are in an uproar People aren't going to turn off because of that. They will turn off and not watch the game if Aaron Rodgers and Jimmy Garoppolo and guys like that aren't playing.
Ross Tucker joining us, former NFL guard. He is also an NFL analyst right now. Ross, last thought. I could have hit you with 10 more things. This is really a great conversation. I do want to ask you about Earl Thomas. He did not practice twice last week. He said yesterday, quote, "I need to make sure my body is 100 and I'm invested in myself. If they were invested in me, I would be out there practicing. But if I feel like anything, I don't give a damn if it's small. I got a headache. I'm not practicing," end quote. I mean, that is such a strong statement. What's your reaction when you hear that?
I think it puts the Seahawks in a really, really tough position because he also had two interceptions and was a big reason why they won the game. If I'm the Seahawks, I move on, Jim. I mean, this is too much now. They're not going anywhere this year anyway. I know they won the game yesterday, but they're not going anywhere this year, not in the NFC. If I can get a good trade offer, I'm moving on because the likelihood that he's going to re-sign there in the offseason is really, really small. And I think it puts your entire culture, if you're Pete Carroll, at risk. The entire culture of, hey, we go out there, we love practice, man, we chew gum, we go out to practice, we fly around, we have a blast. Here you got a guy saying, even if I have a headache, I'm not going out there. He said he expects to be fined. I would fine him the max amount. I'd maybe even consider suspending him a week for conduct detrimental. Then you don't have to pay him for that week. But really, the answer is, you trade him. I mean, this has gotten ugly, and there's no reason to keep him there unless you thought you had a chance to make a Super Bowl run, and there's no chance they have a Super Bowl run. So I don't have any understanding as to why you would keep him. Get whatever you can get for him now and move on.
Isn't it amazing, Ross, like how far that team has fallen, what the culture used to be like? It used to be one of the best cultures in the NFL. And to your point, what was not to like? These guys would fly around, compete, and chew gum at practice. What's better than that?
Nothing, so, and nobody chews more gum than Pete Carroll. It's hilarious.
Or chews it more aggressively and faster. Ross Tucker is a former NFL player. He spent 7 years in the NFL. He has a great podcast, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, and you want to follow him on Twitter, at Ross Tucker NFL. Ross, you killed it. Great to have you back, Ross. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jim. Anytime. You know that, man.
You are the best, Ross Tucker. And when I say you are the best, I mean, I mean that. That guy's the best. Ross Tucker played 7 years in the league. He's got the Ivy League background, as you can tell, and good takes. You know, his take also about the quarterbacks and the hits. He said, look, it's business. We will do what's best for business. And he actually answered a question I wanted to ask him. What is worse for business? If you're the NFL, you're about the bottom line. So what is worse for business? Losing a star quarterback or a starting quarterback, or having everybody every single weekend talk about the refereeing and talk about how that should not be a flag? What's worse for business? And he actually answered the question before I could pose it. His take is, it's worse to lose a starting quarterback. It's worse to lose a star quarterback. The NFL doesn't care about all the bad pub and all the phone calls and all the social media they get about the referees calling penalties like they called on Clay Matthews. What's worse for the league is losing a star under center. You know, it's hard for me to dispute that, but at the same time, that's a bad rule. That is a bad rule. If Clay Matthews tackling the quarterback is going to get flagged with a textbook tackle like that, it's just a bad rule. I'm all in favor of protecting the quarterback at all costs. The helmet rule I get, but not the he tackled the quarterback. That's a foul. I don't get that flag. I don't get that rule. That to me is not good for business. It might not be as bad as losing a quarterback, but it's not good for business. And as for Garoppolo, get the hell out of bounds. For who? For what? To me, that was the epitome of for who? For what? That's not I'm battling to move the chains and win a game to get my team a win. That's not John Elway going into the end zone of the Super Bowl and getting helicoptered. For who? For what? You're on the sideline, man. Get the hell out of bounds. But he didn't. Because he was battling for what? Another yard? 1-800-636-8686. Got to be smarter than that. Now he's got torn ACL. Ross made a great point, though. Could you imagine if that had happened with Garoppolo being under the franchise tag? He got his money. He got paid. He's got guaranteed jack. And now he's got a jacked up knee. All right, telephone lines are wide open. I am really over. There's no better place to watch football than at Buffalo Wild Wings. So if you love football, yelling at TV screens with friends, wearing clothing with somebody else's name on it, then there is a seat waiting for you at Buffalo Wild Wings. You will not want to miss a single game this season on the wall-to-wall TVs. Come in for the football food and football beverages on their new $5 game day menu. $5 38-ounce pitchers of Bud Light, Coors Light, Miller Light, $5 craft, and import talls, including Blue Moon Belgian White, Sam Adams Boston Lager, $5 cheeseburger and fries, $5 Braten fries, $5 select cocktails. Also, do not forget about their traditional and boneless wings with 21 signature sauces and seasonings. Escape to football and the new $5 game day menu at Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, and football. When football is on, you have to be at Buffalo Wild Wings. Prices and participation may vary, subject to restrictions, limited time only, and not valid with any other offer. Be sure to drink responsibly.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Monday always is an ATP day. Ask the Pros brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. And in that case, what you want to do is go to CBSSportsRadio.com/AskThePros. Submit a question. Listen later on. I might answer yours. And think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every single day. 1-800-636-8686. NFL weekend was amazing. College football weekend was crazy. There's no reason for you not to pick up the phone, lob me a call, hit us up. We're wide open until hour number three, and then we get busy once again. Bobby Wilder, head football coach at Old Dominion. They had an amazing upset over the weekend. He joins us at the top of hour number three. Philadelphia Eagles center, Jason Kelce, coming up at 11:20 Pacific. And he got his quarterback back. Was not easy, but Philadelphia found a way to grind it out. Carson Wentz, I thought, looked good. I thought he looked good. I mean, there was rust to be knocked off, but I thought that he looked like Carson Wentz. So we'll get into that. This email says, Rome Slice, if you had told me that the 16.5-point underdog Bills would go into Minnesota and win like that, I would have said, you're crazy. And take it from me. I know a thing or two about crazy. Yours, Margot Kidder. Yeah, that's something that... That's something to make a joke about, Mike. Mental health. Good stuff, Mike. Funny stuff, Mike. Stop emailing, Mike. Dear Jim, although it felt great to be winning again on tightly manicured grass at a huge sporting event, I must say, it is very distracting to have people clinging to you, hoping that your greatness allows them to get national TV exposure. Frustratedly yours, Jim, unable to create an inch of daylight between him and Hawk yesterday. Den Lesks, non-limelight seeker. All right, so he's talking about Adam Hawk and I. We were at the LA Coliseum for the hit on the NFL on CBS, and we got there. Let me just lay this out really quickly. 1 o'clock game Pacific time. The NFL on CBS goes on the air at 9 Pacific, 12 noon. So my call time for the 9 Pacific show was 6:30 a.m., which is not unusual. You know, you get there around 6:30. You get your credential, you get settled, you check in, you get some face cake, and then you wait. And then you rehearse. And then you wait. And then you rehearse. And then you wait. And then you go on the air. So there's a lot of downtime for something like that. Hawk and I try to take advantage of the downtime by getting some pictures and by actually doing a couple of scopes, which I should do more of. But that's what he's talking about. It wasn't like there was no space between Hawk and I. Hawk just held the camera. The camera is from the new phone. iPhone XS Max. That's why that looks so good. Den Lesks, I know you want that camera, man. Don't hate. You can get it. Just do what I do. Do what I did. Pre-order at 12:01 a.m. And you'll get yours. Hey, Jim, I never thought that I would see Tiger claw his way back to relevancy like he did in this weekend's tourniquet. Signed, Roy Horn. I don't understand that at all. Look, if you want to talk Tiger, let's just talk Tiger. Stop trying to make jokes or turn a phrase that nobody understands. Dear Jimmy, now that Tiger has his drive straightened out, how do you like his chances at Augusta next year? Come on, Rome. Tiger or the field? Sincerely, Adam from the next room. Phil in Missouri. Wore me watching just as much golf as football yesterday. That's interesting. Just as much golf as football. All right, so write it down. September 23rd, 2018. Write that down because that was the day that Eldrick Woods recorded his first win in more than 5 years, and it was big. I mean, not Tiger Woods winning a major, big, but it was big. Big, really big. How big? Like Lori Loughlin from Full House tweeting about it, big. She said, quote, "Welcome back, Tiger Woods. We've missed you. Congratulations. Hashtag Tiger Woods. Hashtag Tour Championship." Listen, when Uncle Jesse's gal is tweeting about you, you know you're killing the game. With respect, I do not remember DJ Tanner tweeting when Dustin Johnson won. I don't remember Jason Day getting any love from Kimmy Gibbler. It just goes to show you how big Tiger Woods is and what he still means, not just to golf, but to sports in general. It was like everywhere you look, everywhere you go, there's somebody tweeting about or talking about the cat. Now, normally, after a huge tournament win, I would talk about a couple of the key holes, the shots that made the difference. But that's the thing about yesterday. There weren't any of those. Because Eldrick did what Tiger used to do, turn a Saturday lead into a Sunday coronation. And he absolutely had to do it again yesterday. Let me tell you something. You come in with a three-shot lead. If that guy blows that, you can forget about Tiger ever winning anything ever again. Never mind a major. If that guy can't finish that, if that guy would have blown a three-shot lead, he would have shattered into 1,000 pieces and would have never won jack, would have never won anything. Except that's not what happened. He dropped a birdie on one that gave him a four-shot lead over Rory and Justin Rose. And just like that, it was over. That was vintage Tiger. He broke Rose's spirit on Saturday with six birdies in seven holes, and then he broke Rory right out of the gate on Sunday. After opening with a birdie on one, Tiger didn't have another one until the back nine because he didn't need to. So a lot has changed in his life since he got win number 79, but win number 80 was the closest to what old Tiger used to be like, taking a lead, holding it, and then choking out the rest of the field. And I know a bunch of you Tiger bros were probably sobbing into your red polos, fist pumping in your living rooms, screaming, "Get in the hole," while wiping away your tears. Good for you. Have yourself a day. Have a good time. Just don't come in here and tell me that you saw that coming. Don't try to come in here and tell me you knew all along that this day would come. Because nobody did. Not back in the day. Not during his darkest moments. Not when he was missing putts and missing cuts. Not when a withdrawal was as likely as a Sunday showing. Not when he was a mess of a player with a busted back and a serious case of the chip yips. Nick Faldo said it best when he tweeted, "Many congrats to Tiger Woods. I was one of many who didn't see this happening again. Your sheer determination, willpower, rekindled skills, fade and nerve in your pursuit for victory yet again is legendary. Hashtag incredible." He's right about that. He's right because nobody did see that happening ever again. Not even Tiger himself. Tiger after the round said, quote, "I was beyond playing. I couldn't sit. I couldn't walk. I couldn't lay down without feeling the pain in my back and my leg. This is how the rest of my life is going to be. It's going to be a tough rest of my life," end quote. See, that's the thing. It sure looked that way, didn't it? But he turned it around. And as this year went on, it became more and more clear that it was only a matter of time before he did get that first win. He had the driver back. He had the putter back. You red-shirted bros get absolutely zero credit for calling that shot. This guy was on the verge of breaking through. We could all see that, and he did. And it's impressive. I'm not saying it's not. It's a remarkable comeback. But let's not let the emotion of yesterday get us too carried away. Let's pump the brakes just a little bit on the greatest comeback in the history of the world. Because once again, It might not even be the greatest comeback in the history of golf. This is still not Ben Hogan getting hit by a bus and then coming back. This isn't Tiger coming back from running his rig into a fire hydrant and then a tree. Or a tree and then a fire hydrant. And then going to sleep in the street. He made that comeback already. He already was the best in the world again in 2013. But then it all fell apart again. He came back from that. Credit for that. I'll finish my thoughts on that in a moment. Don't go anywhere. Hour number two is wide open. I'll finish that thought, and I'll go to your calls next.